little place here. Hardly can be seen on the island, on the map rather, called Dominica. St. Lucia, Martinique, Dominica, Guadeloupe.
Right here. Probably you've seen it, maybe. Not very big place.
80,000 people on that little island. They're all of African descent. They were brought there by the British and the French many years ago. That island was discovered by Christopher Columbus on a Sunday, and he called it Dominica, which means Lord's Day. In 1493, long time ago, that island was discovered. Now the island is predominantly Roman Catholic. The people are very poor. The little island is just a mass of mountains like that. They call it a miniature Switzerland. The people will never, ever get anything out of the island, but there's nothing on it to get. There's a little bit of timber. There's a little bit of fruit. But because everything's in such a small quantity, they can't produce enough to make it up, put it on the world market. Britain comes by once a week with its geese boat simply to pick up the few goods they do have so that they won't have to dish out money from the other hand to support them. So if they pick their bananas up and take some of their fruit and some of the smaller things they're able to produce and take it back to England and sell it, that saves the country from helping them in another way, in foreign aid. Bananas are their base, really the backbone of the island. And they're of poor quality because it's all mountains. You can't mechanize the, farmers can't mechanize their crops because it's all on the side of a mountain. If you sent them a brand new John Deere tractor, they'd have to leave it parked and tell them they couldn't use it. Because it wouldn't go up a mountain. All the fields of bananas are on the side of a cliff like this. And they walk up there. Other countries, they have it mechanized. They have conveyor belts or a cable running through the banana trees and nobody touches the banana. They cut it off. They hook it on a hook and it runs on a cable through the banana field and out to the place where it's boxed. And it goes onto the ship and no hand hardly touches it. But in Dominica, it has to be cut off up in the hill. It has to be put on their head. It has to be carried for 2 or 3 miles out of the bush to a road. And then it's put in the back of a truck and it's carried maybe 10 or 15 miles in a truck to the boxing plant. There it's boxed and the man may carry out 100 pounds on his head and maybe be able to sell 20 pounds of it. The rest will be rejected. Because as he's bouncing it out of the bush and on the truck, it's getting bruised. And the British people will not accept it in Britain. So it left off. You can see, they'll never get local. But they do make out a little living there from their the soil. Now I went there in 1969. And when I went there, me and my wife and the little family, we met a little assembly there with about 6 in fellowship in Salisbury. There was an Irish brother called Mr. Samuel McEwen, who was a very old man, went to the island, and was there a couple of years, and went home on furlough after seeing these few Christians gathered together, and then on the boat coming back, he passed away. So when we got there, there was this little assembly. His wife came back, Mrs. McEwen, she is still there. So in that little assembly, we worked and we helped them out for about a year, and then we got a tent. We went other places with the tent, and in those early years, there was few other groups in the island. Whether it was because the island wasn't well known, or whether it was for the reason that people weren't interested in the place, didn't know about it, we don't know. But there was only a few Baptists, the Gospel Mission, and then there was the Roman Catholic Church. And there was a few Anglican and those, but on the whole, there was very few people there. So there's many villages wide open to the gospel. And we get into 3 of them. In the early days, we get into 3 of them. And we saw people saved. to the tent, and three assemblies established in form. Now, over the years, other groups have come in. And if you went to Dominica today, well, you would find every denomination, every sect, every type of group you could think of in that island. And they're in every village. And the villages are anywhere from 600 people to a village up to maybe 2,000 or 3,000. The capital of Roswell has about 15,000 in it. Other than that, the villages are very small. So you can see if you have a Pentecostal church in one corner and a Baptist church down the road in another corner, and up the road a little way there's the gospel mission, and down another little piece there's the Seventh-day Adventist, and around the corner from that there's the Jehovah Witnesses, and then down the road from that there's the Christian Union Mission. And there's only 2,000 people in the village. You get a mass of confusion. Now, if you went to Dominica today, now I'm not saying the Lord couldn't do it, because who wouldn't do that? But I would tell you, if you went to Dominica today, you would have a hard, hard time ever seeing anything really done again. The people are confused. They're confused. And to the extent that the government is thinking about restricting and putting restrictions now upon people getting into the island, and with all these different churches, they're thinking of bringing them together and trying to control them. Brother Taylor came home. You know Brother Ken Taylor? He was here. Anyway, he's hoping to go back. And before he could get back, for the first time, they sent him a letter, and he had to answer 10 questions. Give them a good reason to the 10 questions they asked before he'd get his visa. I am fortunate enough, I'm a citizen. Canadians can have dual citizenship. So once you're in the island long enough years, 7 years or over, you can become a citizen. So we have our own passport, but Brother Ken was only there 3 years, so he couldn't get that. So if you're going into the island now, he had to answer these 10 questions. So this is what they're doing. They're trying to stop the entrance in of so many of these groups, but they're already there. So, for instance, I'll give you a little example of how the people think. And it's not their fault. Not their fault. It's the fault of men who come from our country and from the United States there, and the impressions they leave upon these people's minds. Now, I'll have a person, lots of time, might as well put his hand on my shoulder, you know, Brother Sim, what will you give me and I'll join up? What will you give me and I'll join up? You know, make it worth my while and I'll become a member. Now, where are they getting that idea from? Now, I'm a real assembly man. And I saw a lot of trash and a lot of junk and a lot of things being done under the name of evangelistic work, and it's nothing but trash. People come, and when they see that there's a situation of competitiveness, they'll actually buy. Not with $100 in cash, no, but you'll get so much food. You get clothes when the clothes box comes. And I'll help you with your little house. You know, you come over and join up with us and we'll make it worth your while. So a lot of people do that. Now, where did they get that idea from? Well, I'll tell you. We have a savanna in Roswell. Maybe an acre. Maybe an acre and a half, 2 acres. Something like that. Here's an American man now. One of the denominations. He's coming on a campaign to Dominica. Now his American dollar will make 3 of Dominican's dollars. So once he hits the island, for every dollar he's got in their currency, he's getting 3. It's worth 3. So he comes with, say he comes with $30,000. That's no problem for them, boys. They come with $30,000. Right away, he's got 100,000 EC dollars. Very good. Now, he looks at that island, a massive mountain. He can't see himself going around through all that, and risking his life up on those bad roads and that. He's got $90,000 or $100,000. Let's get a big grandstand and we'll build it here in the savannah in Roswell. And then we will transport the island to the savannah. Anytime you go anyplace, for a ride, you can get a whole load. No problem. So, what do? They have these Bedford trucks, 3-ton Bedford trucks. They're fixed up to be buses. They haul bananas and goods in the top, and they fill it up for during the day, but at night and morning, it's open and empty with seats in it, then they haul people back and forward. So, the island's only 32 miles long, 16 miles wide. We'll offer 100 EC dollars to every truck driver for every night for 2 weeks to transport the people into the savannah. Well, there's a man back there, he's got a Bedford truck. He used it all day. Here's a chance to make $100 tonight. Sure, why not? Sure, he agreed. That's all. That's $100, that's in 2 weeks, that's a good little bit of money for him. So he agrees. So into Roswell comes the whole island. These trucks, well, I won't say the whole 80,000, huh? But you know what I mean. The majority of people that are able to come, in they come. And here they have them. In the savannah. Sometimes it's a Pentecostal movement, there's healing goes on. Other times it'll be the Baptist or it'll be another group, the Seventh-day Adventist, whichever group it is. This happens this time, 6 months or next year, the next group has their turn. And so the people are taught all this confusion, and these people see what money is doing. Money's a wonderful thing. But on the other hand, it can play havoc. It can play havoc. Into the minds of these people, they get the idea that I want them. And I want them in the assembly so bad, I'll pay for them. Yeah. That's what other people are doing. A man comes to Dominica, I'm just telling you this to show you the way, the confusion in a small island like this. They come to the island. I'll say, maybe you won't like me saying names, but anyway, I know all these boys, eh? They're my friends. Canadian and Americans, they all come there and I end up associated with them. I don't agree with them. I don't go along with them. Some of them don't like me. It's alright. One man tried to tell me, Brother Jenkins, about this pastor. He said, Brother Sims, there's no difference between me and you. Why can't we work together? But I said, there is a difference. He said, there's not. I said, you're something I'm not. He said, what? I'm a Christian, you're a Christian? Well, I said, you're a Baptist. And I'm not. I'm just a child of God. I'm only a Christian. Saved by the grace of God, I'm not a Baptist. And you are. Sometimes they'll have all kinds of arguments. How they want us to break down and work with them. You can't. It's a massive confusion. Now I forgot the point I had before that. Anyway, time is gone. And Dominica has 3 assemblies. One up in Paris, Savannah. You went there today, you'd meet about 35, 40 Christians there in the assembly in Paris, Savannah. When I went there at first, there was nobody. Just the Romans. Simple people up there in the mountains, you know, they have They never been outside the little village. I took one of them for, we took the assembly one time on a picnic from Pedista Valley. We rented the truck. And here's an island now, 30 miles long, 16 miles wide. We were taking them to the other end to a beach to have a picnic. And the brother, he'd be about 60 years old, Brother Francis, where we were riding on the back of this Bedford, standing up, we're up on the top of the mountain looking out over the island. He says, man, isn't Dominica big? Isn't Dominica big? Never was out there in his life. Here he saw a little island, 30 miles long and 16 miles wide, and saw the big thing. They say to me, Brother Sims, how big is your island? How big is your island? See, they don't know, huh? They don't know these things. And up there you'll meet a happy little band of Christians. Saved by the grace of God, and I'm not the one responsible for the most of them saved. If you went to Pedista Van Assembly, you might find maybe a dozen and a half that I won for the Lord at the beginning. Maybe I had a little part in the rest of it all, but they won the rest of themselves in open-air work and in personal work. Now there's another hall a few miles away, down the mountain, maybe 4 miles away, a little gospel hall there now in Point Carrot, where they work long and hard. There's a hall there now, and I wouldn't be surprised before long there'll be an assembly there. You go to Cochrane, back into the interior of the island, there's another little assembly, about 20 in fellowship, maybe 25. When we first went there with the gospel, we had a riot. Just about didn't get out of the village at all. And as you learn, you know, if you go to the mission field, you have a lot of things to learn. You've got to be careful. But anyway, you learn. That's why I say, not much point an old man go to the mission field. I had one come down and try to help us preach, and he was hopeless. I was glad he left. Because he was finished. You know, it was no use him coming at that age. You've got to go when you're young, and you've got nerve, and you're not afraid. Well, anyway, we came to this village, and we had rented the school, and we're having these meetings. And I never knew before that it was an insult to refer and in any way associate a donkey with a black man, with the Dominicans. I didn't know that. In our country, you say, you dumb donkey, you know, you refer to that, there's no problem. Eh? Well, we were preaching in the meeting there and having our meetings every night. And of course, you must preach against sin because sin is rampant. No point to go and tell them about how Jesus loved them without first telling them their need. And the place was stirred up. Some of those boys and girls were angry. They didn't like to have you preaching against fornication. They don't want you preaching against that. And of course, we had to preach and to tell them what this is all going to take them. So there was this couple down the road there, a girl and her brother, particularly Bruce, big bearded fellow. Anyway, this night I'm preaching on Isaiah chapter 1. The ox knows his master. And the ass, how's it go? The ox knows his owner, and the ass his master's crib. But my people do not know me. Well, as soon as I said that, that big burly fellow, he stood up. He says, do you hear what the white man says? He's called us all asses. He's referred to us all as donkeys. Crowd got up, and it went into confusion. We were there long enough. A few had got saved. We had one friend, the only thing that saved us. And that man got them going. And I was outside with a man with his hand around my tie and shirt and twisted up under my neck and shouting into my face, did you call me a donkey? How are we going to do? Eh? Only the grace of God got us out of there. After we left, they had a fight amongst themselves. Cutlasses were brought out. They ended up in court. Police were brought in. We went back the next night, and we never had another bit of problem. You know, really, on the whole, Dominicans are peaceable people. Friendly, peaceable people. But this business of sin got them all stirred up. And then this fella, with that thing I said, that just set it off. And we had a riot that night. But we never had no more trouble after that. 18 people got saved. 13 were baptized. Today there's 25 in that fellowship. But it's only fair I tell you the rest. Didn't all go on, you know. You know, you want to be a missionary, you know, you got to be able to take the disappointments with the good points, the good things. Since I come home, that one coup while I was there, attempted coup, and I've had two since I left. Howell Piper was once in the Cochrane Assembly, joined the defense force, and entered into the coup, and they shot him dead in the prison yard. Ashton Benjamin, tell us that I preached this since we were that high, grew up to be young men, saw them saved and brought into the assembly. Ashton never got into the assembly. But he was down at the minister at the police headquarters. And there he was trying to get, with the rest of them, trying to get the police to surrender. And when they found they were losing, they ran. He ran into a house and the police surrounded him. And Ashton come out with his hands up. And they filled his body with bullets. Those are boys that were saved. I led them to the Lord. Just because you get saved, you know. You don't give your life to the Lord. Those boys both joined the defense force because that's where money was. When the new government came, she disbanded the army because they were associated with the previous political party. She disbanded them and they lost their job and their money left. And they formed a coup to get back in power. It cost them their life. I wrote Christina, Ashton's wife, a letter. Told her I was sorry, sent a little money to her. I didn't know, but she wrote me back, and she told me a month after Ashton died, she got saved. Yeah, Christina's now saved. Sending the little children across the road now to the assembly in Cochrane. Then there's an assembly in Roswell. Oh. It was a long, drawn-out thing. Took us a long time there because it was the center of confusion. It's the capital. And we won one here and one there and one over there, you know, an odd one here and there. And then some of them got married to the ones from the other assembly. And soon we had enough. And there was a little assembly formed in Rawson. It has about 20, 25. Then the hurricane came. How much do you want to listen to? Time to quit? Okay, I'll quit by 22. It's 3 more minutes. All right. The hurricane came. Wiped the island flat. The forest is finished. You go there now, all you see the trees with little bushes on top when they were once full. It just stripped the leaves, the branches, and everything off them. But they came back with little bunches on them. The forest will take years and years ever to be the same. They all lost their crops. Everything was flattened out. Homes were lost. Roofs went off the homes. Our homes, that we had some better homes than the most of them. They had little homes that are very fragile. Most of them blew down. Our house lost its roof. That was all. Well, anyway, the Canadian people, the Irish Christians, and the American Christians came to our aid. And there was funds set up, as you know, probably here in Halifax and down in Sarnia, Ontario, and in St. Lucia. And we had maybe 30 or 40, maybe 50, I never really counted them. Fellows come from the United States, some from out west here, some from Ontario, came down to help us to rebuild. And we got more out of, we ended up better off with the hurricane than we were before. That is the Christian. Some who never had nice, well, I wouldn't say nice homes, but they never had a home, some of them. And some of those who lost their home, though it wasn't a nice home in our standard, yet it was nicer than what they had before. But we rebuilt them. In Cochrane, they never had no gospel hall. We had to rent the girls, one of the brothers, sisters' home. It was always a wonder every month she put us out. Every month she might put us out. We couldn't get no place to build a hall. But when the hurricane came, when Oscar looked after the food, tons of food come, man. Tons of it. And I had a Toyota Jeep, and me and my wife would sit there for hours and hours and hours, sorting out this, in this garage, food to be distributed between four assemblers. So if you want to have a job and try and please people, you want to try that job. I took the Jeep, and I took the food up, and I left it for them to distribute amongst themselves. And they just couldn't agree that they were getting fair treatment. Anyway, where was I? Oh yeah. Because we took that food up there to Cochrane, Oscar never just left it with the Christian. He was the one of the leading brothers there. He never just shared it with the Christian. You know, he was really wise. He shared it with everybody. The unsaved too. And the day came when all the material came, Oscar went to his brother, who was always opposed to the gospel. Always opposed to us. And he said to John, he said, you know, John, he said, could we possibly use this piece of ground here between our houses, it was family land, to put a gospel hall up? Well, John said, sure, why not? Sure, go ahead. Boy, Oscar moved. He had us up there the next day, and Gaius Goff was there, and we had the pillars dug, and we had a little hall up there in a couple of days. And so they got a gospel hall there now. Prince of Anne has a nice gospel hall. They had one before, it blew down. They have another one in Roswell. There's also a nice gospel hall. There's one now in Point Carroll. There's no assembly there, but there's a gospel hall. And up in Loda, another place, there's a gospel hall, but no assembly.
They're all descendants of Africa. They were brought there by the British and the French many years ago as slaves. They're all of a Roman Catholic background. That was their religious faith. The island was discovered by Christopher Columbus in 1493, and he called it Dominica, which means in Italian, Lord's Day, Sunday. So it actually means Sunday. When we got there, there was a little assembly of about six people in fellowship. Last night I met some folk who knew Mr. McEwen, and some of them knew Mrs. McEwen. Mr. McEwen was an Irish man who was spent many years in the West Indies and in the Bahamas, and in the last few years of his life, he went to Dominica as an old man. And he saw these few little Christians gathered together there, about six of them, in a village called Salisbury. He was there about 2 years, and then went home on a furlough, and on the way back in the boat, he died. And so Mrs. McEwen took him back to Ireland, where he was buried, and she came back alone. Over the years in Dominica, the years we've been there, there has been three assemblies other than that one, four. One in a village called Padisa Van, one in the capital, Roswell, and one back in the interior in a village called Cochrane. There's another gospel hall, but they do not break bread there as yet, in Point Carib. And then there's another gospel hall up in a village in the interior again called Loda, where there's a hall, but there's no breaking of bread there. So in the future someday, if the Lord will, and He blesses, and there's others saved, in those places there will be an assembly too, no doubt. It is an island of poverty. They got their independence in 1979. And being an island 30 miles long, 16 miles wide, with 80,000 people in it, and it's nothing but a mass of mountains like that, there's no possible way they will ever make survival on their own. And as the days get tougher and things get more expensive, it's going to become harder and harder for them. They do have bananas, but as we told last night, the bananas growing up in these mountains, it's very difficult to get them out in good shape because it can't be mechanized. If they had one of your modern tractors there and some modern machinery, they couldn't use it because they couldn't get it up on the mountain to use it. There's no place where there's flat land and there's acres of land. No place like that. All the farmers have their little 10 or 12 acres up on the side of some mountain broke up in patches. There he'll grow his bananas, he'll put them on his head, and he'll carry them for 2 or 3 miles to a road. There he'll put them on a truck and he'll haul them another 4 or 5 miles to the boxing plant, and where they'll be put on a boat. But by the time that he brings them from the mountain and to the boxing plant, where the man with his knife examines them, he might bring 100-pound stalk of figs and he might have 20 or 30 pounds left that he can ship, because the rest will be bruised and marred and they won't be accepted. But if you went to Peru, or you went to Jamaica, or to the U.S., you would find the flat land, and you would find a cable running through the banana field. And the farmer would come to his stalk of bananas, he would cut it off, he would never touch it with his hand hardly, hook it onto the cable, and the cable would go around to shake it to the boxing plant, where the man with his knife would just take off maybe one or two, and the whole stalk would be put in the box and sent away, because it never was touched. It never was banged or bruised. So, everything's against them. They're not big enough to get on the world market, and so Dominica will always be a struggling, poor country. Unless someone comes in and takes over the place and betters it for them. I try to get the important things for you to be interesting. The assembly in Paritsa Van, it has about 40 in the fellowship. The one in Salisbury has about 40 in the fellowship. The one in Cochrane has 20, 25 in it, and the same as the one in Roswell has about 25 in the fellowship. The one in Paritsa Van was the first assembly we saw planted. I'll maybe tell you of a conversion of one man. Mr. Francis, he would be about 60 years old when he got saved. I went there with the tent and went up an old road. Couldn't get there with a vehicle, and I walked up this road, and here was some men digging a ditch to let the water run down the side of the little road that ran up in the village. And I saw these men there clearing out this ditch, and I stopped and talked to them for a minute, told them who I was, and asked him if there was a place that I could put a tent. Mr. Francis says, yes. He says, there's a little piece of ground that your tent will probably be able to be squeezed onto. I have no vegetation on it now. You can use it to put your tent, and I'll put my goods in it after, my garden in it after. So that was fine. Getting talking to the man, about 30 years before that, an American called Nick Russell, don't know who he's associated with, but a saved man, came as a young man to Dominica and spent about 10 years living alone in that island. How he did it, I don't know. But as a young man, he was just a young fellow, about 25, he spent about 10 years of his life there. And he roamed that whole island. He didn't know anything about assemblies, so he didn't establish those assemblies. All he knew was that he was to take the gospel to the people. And he traveled that island on foot from one end to the other. And you could go to Dominica and in any village of the older people, you could ask them, had you ever heard of Nick Russell? Oh, yeah. We were kids. Nick Russell came here and taught us courses and that sort of thing. Bible verses. Well, anyway, this man, 30 years previous, had heard Nick Russell preach the gospel in the village of Prisavai. And heard him tell, if you're not saved, you'll not be in heaven. You'll die and you'll go to hell forever. Well, the Catholic people weren't accustomed to telling that. And he heard that. He heard it for several nights while the man was in the village preaching in the open air. From that time till I went there, nobody'd ever been back. And he told me many a time, I'd lay down in my bed and I'd wonder about eternity. That Mr. Russell, Nick Russell, had told us about many years before. Where will I be in eternity? Well, he gives us the opportunity to put the tent up in his yard. And if you could probably have guessed already, he's the first one to get saved. There were about six at that time in the tent that we had pitched there got saved. Now, I want to tell you something of the history of this man. It's not nice. Not nice. Right today, he's passing through trial that you would never be able to do. Perhaps I'm wrong for putting him in that position. I'm going to ask you, brethren, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to ask you to give me your opinion after. Did I do right or did I do wrong? I want you elder brethren to tell me what you think after. I've asked several people. It's amazing the answers I get on this. Anyway, this man got saved. The little assembly was formed. In the country of Dominica, the cultural is that the wife is a part of the family. She's just like one of the children. And if she doesn't behave herself, she's spanked just like the children. That's the culture now. Everybody accepts that. If that's not practiced, there's something wrong with you. There's something desperately wrong. So, Mr. Francis got saved, but his dear wife didn't. And after a few years, she began to think, you know, he's really changed. He's really changed. He's really listening to that white guy. He's really practicing what that white guy said. And that white guy says, that a man is not to spank his wife. And he really believes it. Boy, she thought, this is great. This is great. So she took to liberties that she would never have dared done before. She'd go to a dance. Stay the weekend. Come home Monday. Mr. Francis never said a word. Never said a word. The boys came home. John and Peter came home one night with a long stick. They said, here, Dad, when she comes home tonight, Peter, she's shaming us all to dance. I taught Mr. Francis from the scriptures, as I thought to be right now, love your wives even as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. You never touch your wife. That's not proper. He read the scriptures with me. He saw it. He agreed. Things got worse, and things got worse, and things got worse. And one day Mrs. Francis come home with a baby. This broke old Mr. Francis' heart. He comes to me and he says, Brother Sims, he says, my heart's burning, he says. My heart's burning. He said, I can't bear to have that child in my home. What am I going to do? Well, The rest of the young brothers know. The village. They're saying, see what Christians are like. See that? Man can't even control his own house. He calls himself a Christian. You call that Christianity? Look at that. The man can't even control his own family and house. You won't see that happening amongst the ungodly. The wife would never dare do it. But look at what Christians do. You call that Christianity? The village had a bad, sour taste over that. The young brethren came to me and they said, listen, brother, said, whatever Mr. Francis does, that's all right. But we're telling you right now, Brother Sims, we'll never do it. We'll never allow it. We're telling you that straight. In Dominica, we will just never allow our wives to get out of hand like that. We'll spank them. Regardless of what you say. Well, Mr. Francis tonight is living way up there in the mountain, a sad, broken-hearted, discouraged man, laughed at by the people in the village. There he is. Not happening once, happening twice, three times. Another young man, Hennessy's wife, she tried it. And he took the harness off the bell, off the horse, the donkey. And he went down to the house and got her and whipped her all the way home. And it never happened again in his house. You think this is hard language? Well, I'll just let you in on what some of the things go on now. Now I ask the brethren, in a number of assemblies, did I do right in teaching Mr. Francis and the Christians that? Or should have I left their cultural alone? Now, I've got a number of answers. Some from both sides. I like to see what my brethren will tell me tonight. Now, you've got to think about it. Don't just rush into it madly. And think of it only from your standpoint now. Hey, you can pray for Mr. Francis. He's a fine Christian man, but he's a broken-hearted man. He was saved one of the first ones in the tent, and he's still there going to the assembly. Never saw none of his family saved, nothing. He alone is a testimony, well, in the assembly to an extent. Because of that, though, it's brought a lot of shame and dishonor upon him. Hennessy Barron. You know, when you think about how people get saved here in Canada, and we're accustomed to a good, clear story as to how a person should get saved. And if they don't meet our standards, we sometimes wonder if they are saved. I'm going to tell you how Hennessy Barron got saved. Now, if he told you how he got saved, you'd say he's not saved. Because you can't get saved that way. So simple as that. But his life proves he is saved. Hennessy Barron, here's the gospel. A real simple man. Hardly read. If you took him out of his little village there in Felice Van and took him to another island, he'd be lost. He doesn't know the world. He don't know nothing. One day, going over a mountain, I was just playing jokes with the Christians. We were walking. The vehicle broke down. We had to walk. And the moon was shining bright up in the sky. And I said, you know, I said, the moon you have in Dominica is a lot brighter than the one we have in Canada. Is that right, Lucy? The one you got in Canada is a lot brighter. Yeah, I said it's a lot brighter than this one. They didn't know. They didn't know. Thunder. The older people hear when they hear the thunder. God's angry. Some say he's throwing stones. Others say he's moving his chair. They'll swear up and down. You don't have to worry about the lightning. It's the noise you got to be careful for. Don't worry about that flash. That never hurt anybody. It's the noise. So you can see the background, huh? You're not going to expect nothing great from them. Hennessy hears about heaven and hell. He realizes that what the other Christians got is something he hasn't got from his chapel down there in the village. And as he listens to them talk, the thing becomes more real to him all the time. One day out in the garden, a banana stalk, I don't know whether you've seen a banana tree or not. I got a bad cold. About 10 days now, I've had a sore throat, and it's getting worse, and it's getting worse. A banana stalk, it's not a tree, it's about this big around, and it's just a fluffy thing full of water, very soft. Has great big leaves on it. And he's out in his garden, and he cuts one of those big leaves down, and he puts it on the ground, and he bows his knees upon that leaf. And in a simplicity, like they pray, he puts his hands like this, and he bows his head there on his knees in the garden. And just he said the words like the brothers told him down in the village. He said, God, I'm a guilty sinner. I'm going to hell. Save me right now. And God saved him right there. You can't deny he's saved. Tell him, talk to him now, he can explain it a little better. But that's where he'll take you to. When he preaches the gospel, that's the way he'll preach it. How he got saved. You ask God to save you, and God will save you. Isn't that Romans 13? Whoso calleth upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. Hennessy Barron got saved in that simple, simple way. You won't find any great teachers. You won't find any theologically minded people. No. That is why we must teach these things and try and impress it upon their minds over and over again. Simple things like gathering to the name of the Lord Jesus. In Roswell, we have all new halls. I'll quit just now. As you know, maybe, you probably remember the hurricane. Anyway, in 1979, a hurricane passed through. Everything was destroyed and we got all new halls. From the Christian's point of view, they're better off now than they were before the hurricane. Many of them got a nice little home. Nothing compared to Canadian style, but in comparison to what they're accustomed to, they got a nice little home. Some of them that never had a home got one. They got bigger gospel halls than they had. Roswell was in desperate need of a gospel hall. They got a brand new one. Cochran never had a gospel hall at all, and they got a brand new one. Paritza Van had one, but it was getting too small. It was blowing down. They got a new one, big enough. Point Carib never had no gospel hall. There was no assembly there, but there was a number of Christians. They now have a little hall. And the same up in Loda. There's not an assembly there, some Christians, and they now have a hall. So in all these things, Romans chapter 8, all things work together for good to those that love Him. And so the hurricane was a terrible experience, scared the life out of us all, but on the end of it, the outcome of it was better off for everybody. Man, I should only be fair to tell you too, we got a home out of it too. The Christians were very good to us. Over 12 years being there, paying rent, never able to get enough for a down payment. We always were paying rent. We could have bought a house twice with the rent we paid out. But when the hurricane came, the Lord's people were good to us. We got enough money to put a down payment on a house. So we now have a house too. So we all benefit. And I'm sure the Christians in Dominica would extend their thanks to you all for everything that you put in the offering and in the account down there that went to feed them and to build in their little homes and to give them gospel hall. They'd have never had it without the hurricane. Never. No way would they have those gospel halls or those new homes apart from the hurricane.